Welcome to the Lifecast. We hope that you find this ministry of New Life Assembly of God as an encouragement to you. You will hear messages and lessons in God's Word by our staff and special guests. Enjoy the podcast.
A couple of verses from Luke chapter 15. Then I'm just going to tell you a little story out of my life this last week or so. Then we'll just draw some application and close in prayer and allow you to go with the presence of the Lord and enjoy family and friends and walk out with a reminded purpose and call in our Christian life. So Luke chapter 15, verse 8 and 9. Jesus is speaking, and of course this chapter, you know, it's about the lost sheep and the lost coin and the lost son, and Jesus tells these things for a very specific reason, and we'll look at that at the end. Verse 8, it says, "Or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.' Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents." I don't know if you've ever, well, I'm sure we all have, but if you can recall a time where you lost something that was very important. Over the last week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, I keep hearing these stories from people, just random conversation about them losing something and them going through the process of finding it, even to the point of calling on the Lord, saying, "God, I need to find this. You got to help me." And them finding it. Even at our deacon meeting and some of the devotional part and prayer part and the discussion part, you see, we don't get together and just do like financial business stuff and just vision stuff. We pray together and discuss God's Word together. And it's just part of our meeting. In fact, that's probably the most important thing that we do. And it's a thing that I'm hearing from the fellas time and again, that that's the part they look forward to. And so, even in that, there was testimony of some things that were lost at the process of going through and being found. Well, this last Thursday, I'm getting ready to leave the house, and this was just happened to be a morning where, you know, I had a jacket, grabbed my Bible, had my phone, I think I had something with me to drink, I had my truck key, and then I have the ring with the house key, church key, and now there's another key on there for something. And, you know, so I'm doing all this, hold the screen door open, and, you know, pull the door shut, and turn the key, and, you know, do all that kind of thing, and get to the truck. And so I get to church, and I'm loading up the things I need to bring in. I also had like some papers for study, and grabbing all of this, and where's my church key? Where's the ring with my house key, my church key, and that whatever that other key is? It's like, wait a minute, where is it? And so I set down the stuff, I'm shaking stuff, I'm looking through the truck. I mean, I'm looking in places that I know the key is not going to be there. But, you know, I know God is busy. I know there's way bigger things in life than my keys. But I still said, "Oh, Lord, I got to find these keys." I wasn't concerned about the house key. I was concerned about losing the church key, to be honest with you. And I just thought, "Oh, no, I need these keys. I got to take time. I'm looking." Well, finally, I had to give up because I'm coming in. We've got our staff meeting, and I have some other things going on. And then right after that, I had to go and meet a few people. And then I had to leave for, head to La Crosse for a late lunch with my wife. It was my birthday, and she was going to take me to lunch. And just all this stuff. And so, you know, most of you know, I kind of park over here by the end of the building near the back office entrance, and I got my stuff, and I'm walking down the sidewalk to the front of the church because I know the front door's open because the staff is here already. I come in with my stuff and I greet Carol and Marlene, and then I stand in the hallway outside my locked office door. Would somebody let me in? You know? And so they let me in and throw it on my stuff, and I'm like, where is that key? I got a couple minutes before the meeting. So I go out the back door again. I propped it open. And I'm going through my truck again. I'm looking where I've already looked. These keys are important. I got to have these keys. Don't want to lose these keys. I mean, I come back in the building and I'm like, I don't know. So we go into the meeting. Of course, I'm in the meeting. I'm focused. You know, I'm listening. We're sharing. We're getting details hammered out, organizing events, ministries, all those things that we do. But in the back of my mind, where's my keys? Gotta find my keys. I text my wife. She was on a walk with a friend, and they do this somewhat regularly. I say somewhat because, you know, the day they were going to walk and it was raining lightly, they decided to just go have coffee. So, fair-weathered walkers. She's doing more than I am, so I can't really criticize. But I hassled her. I said, what? You what? Yeah, we didn't want to walk in the rain, so we went for coffee. Come on, woman. No, anyhow, I text her. I said, listen, I lost my church and house key. When you get home, would you look in the front door? I mean, I remember locking it, but I'm just, you know, I've been a little distracted these days and just kind of busy with a variety of things. And so I'm thinking, did I lock it and then grab my stuff and leave the key in the door? I told her, when you pull in, would you just kind of scan the driveway, see if they fell somewhere? I said, and text me and let me know, you know, if you find them or not. So I'm going through the meetings and all this and thinking, where's my keys? After the meeting, checked, you know, Sue says, no keys. I told my son, I said, you know, I kind of faintly remember, now I'm grasping at straws, okay, I'll just tell you. I faintly remember feeling like I dropped something. And I started to associate that with, was it my keys? I mean, I'm not only, you know, tearing my truck apart and looking and all this stuff and look again, and now I got other people looking for me. Okay? You know how this works. And I tell Brock, I said, like, I just feel like I dropped something. I can't remember where I had that feeling. I'm thinking maybe it was in the bedroom. Felt like something fell, and I looked, and then I'm thinking, well, that doesn't make sense because I remember locking the door. The keys can't be in the bedroom if I'm outside locking the door. You know, you start grasping for straws, and you start grinding beyond reason, and reasonability comes back to you, and all these things, and so I just like, I don't know, Lord, I've got to find these keys. Now it's getting crunch time where I got to leave here, and I said, I got to go look in the truck again. Feel like I'm losing my mind, you know. Shush. So I start looking where I looked. I'm shaking stuff again. I'm looking where I know they're not going to be. But, you know, you got to do it out of diligence, right? And, you know, I reached under the seat the best I could, but you know, underneath they got like those wires and the harness and then the thing that glides it. And it's like, I can't even get my big mitt really in the front of the seat. And, you know, you got to reach around the back and try to get to the, you know, I just, getting your arm over the bar and under the next one and, you know, all the contortionist things that you have to do to get under your seats these days. I remember having a 1974 Roadrunner, didn't have all that stuff under the seat. Anyhow, so now I got to look. Well, I looked before, but now I'm at the point where I'm laying my head on the dirty floor mat to look under the seat just to be extra thorough. And you're trying to look through where the harness is, and you slide the seat, and then I got a glimpse of what looked like the Harley Davidson keychain. I said, I think that's them. Then it took me 2 minutes to get my hand to where it needed to be to get the thing out, and I got my keys. Oh, yeah, okay, so, yeah. There was a great rejoicing. I mean, I said, Lord, thanks so much. I know you're really busy, but thanks for, you know. And I'm telling Sue, and I got my keys, and oh, good, you know. And so there was joy again, and I could restore my life the rest of the day and be more focused. Well, here's this woman Jesus tells about having 10 silver coins, and she lost one. Now, you might be thinking, well, man, you know, she lost a silver coin. Bummer, it has value, but, you know, it's a coin. She's still got 9. I mean, what's wrong with her? Is she just, like, really cheap? What's going on here? I want you to know that Jesus didn't randomly just pick 10 silver coins. Throughout the Old Testament and Jewish culture and history, and some of it evolved and changes like many things do, they've had different traditions that they understood. So when Jesus was speaking to these religious leaders and those around him that were listening, when he said that she had 10 silver coins and lost one, they all knew what it meant. We can read it and go, it's a coin. I guess it's important. It must have been really expensive. You know, the value may have been a day's wage. It might have been more, give or take. I want you to know that one of the traditions that they had is when a young man or man wanted to get married, generally speaking, if he was growing up in his home under the patriarch, which would be his father, or if the father died, someone else was in that place, and they would send someone to go find him a wife. I think it's a really great idea. I mean, not when I was looking for a wife, but for my children, I think, hey, that would have been all right. Hey, Justin, I still would have picked you. So, anyhow, so what happens is they go and they find a wife. And if the young lady accepts, and they come together, and they go through several things, but one of the things that happens is once there's this agreement, the groom will then show up and meet her for the very first time. If she was from another village or town or over the ridge or whatever we do here, you know. And he would give to her 10 silver coins. Sometimes they were gold. Sometimes in history and tradition, it was something different. And of course, this is just the being betrothed. Just the betrothal. Okay, that's what this is. These coins were the betrothal. It wasn't always, you know, the full bride price, because sometimes there were more things added to it, like, you know, 2 camels, 3 goats, and whatever, depending on how wonderful they thought their daughter was to make an agreement. I mean, if you look back in the Old Testament, you remember Jacob and Rachel? He loved Rachel. He liked Rachel. He loved Rachel. He goes to her father, and he says, I want to marry her. And he agrees to working 7 years. That was the price. 7 years to marry his daughter. Of course, she wore a veil and everything, and then after the wedding part happened and they came together, he discovered that he didn't even get the woman he was working for. He got her older sister. He was enraged. Now he's married to Rachel's older sister. And the father-in-law says, well, we have a custom here that the older daughter has to get married first. So he agrees to another 7 years to work for Rachel. In-laws. You know, okay, so anyhow. Here we are in the New Testament, and Jesus tells a story. So understand the value of this coin. It wasn't just what's the value monetarily. She was given a betrothal. She was betrothed. She was given 10 coins. It was very customary, very traditional. So when Jesus said this, they all go, oh, I get it. And we go, it's a coin. No, no. She can't be losing any of these coins. In fact, what would happen is they would take these 10 coins and stitch them into a veil or on a headband. And they would wear it from that point forward during the betrothal because it sends a message to everyone, I am married. And you think she's not married yet. Oh, in their culture, day and age, when you were betrothed, you were considered married because after they received it, they signed a document that they're married. But they don't come together as husband and wife yet. They don't have the wedding yet. It usually took another year or two before they ever got to be man and wife, and yet they were considered married. How do you like that? I'm engaged, we're married, we can be together, I won't see you for another year or two. You see, those 10 coins were representative, and they were also a security out of respect for the woman. Because during that time where they were married, but not come together as man and wife, and they don't live together, they're apart, it was a security for her that if he divorced her during the betrothal, because they're considered married, they would have to go sign legal documents and get divorced, she can keep the coins. Some measure of security for her and something. Or if one of them were unfaithful and decided to break that because they committed adultery. Get this. The betrothal, they're not even together as man and wife, but they're considered married. And if they cheated, it was considered adultery, even though they've not come together yet as man and woman. And so these 10 coins, understand, she has to be able to wear those and present those on her wedding day. You see, this was about respect for her family and his. Losing a coin would not just lose the monetary value, you would lose reputation, which showed great disrespect, a lack of caring, all of these flaws that people just find out about. She was turning the house upside down. This wasn't just a set of keys. This had to do with her life, the quality of person she portrayed, and her future. The coin was a big deal. It says she swept the house and was putting on the lamp. I mean, she's looking at night. She's looking in the daylight hours. She's turning the place upside down. She called friends and let them know she found it. Why? Because they knew when she lost it. She called for help. Look with me. Help me. I found it. Woohoo! They're all rejoicing. Great rejoicing over something that's lost. I mean, I told you, I found my keys. And some of you started going, oh, it's just a set of keys. I mean, they're important to me. But it's not like, you know, it was betrothal. And being betrothed and what it meant in that culture and time. This coin was so significant. It was lost. And then it was found. I was reminded over these different stories I was hearing from people over a couple of weeks and then my own experience with the keys and what the Lord was doing, and I remembered this, and I want you to think about this. When we lose something, other things kind of go on hold for a while. You call for help. You got to find this. You put other things aside till you get it. I wonder if you and I exercise the same diligence and passion and commitment to seeking out lost people. You see, keys are keys. Even coins are coins. But people are eternal. You're eternal. You have a spirit. You know, the coin doesn't know it's lost. It's just a coin. No life in it. It's kind of like us without Christ. You know, before he found me, I didn't really know I was lost. Some people don't know they're lost. I wonder if we shy away from being inconvenienced to reach somebody who's lost. Maybe they don't even know they're lost. I mean, I'm calling Sue, help me find this. Brock, I don't know. Can you let me in my office? I'm looking everywhere. I'm checking the truck 2-3 times. I'm trying to replay things. I'm making a lot of mental and emotional exercise to try to find this stuff, grinding over lost keys. Do you and I exercise that kind of energy and effort over lost people? You see, why would Jesus tell this story about the lost coin? Why would he tell the story about the lost son or the lost sheep? It comes back to the first two verses. It says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear Jesus. And the Pharisees, religious leaders, and the scribes, you know, the attorneys of God's law, religious leaders again, they were grumbling. And they were saying things like this: this man, Jesus, receives sinners and he eats with them. And Jesus begins to go and tell the story. The reason he told the story of the lost coin is they understood the importance and how frantic a woman would be and the extent she would go to. Well, what was Jesus sent for? If we look in Luke chapter 19, verse 10, it talks about Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. Here he is with sinners and tax collectors, and the religious community's grumbling. And Jesus tells them the story. He came to seek those who are lost. We search hard for keys, for coins, for whatever. I wonder if we put the same effort into seeking the lost. Because they're not just a set of keys. They're people that Jesus gave his life for, and aren't we glad? Because we are recipients. So Jesus came to seek this lost guy and save this lost guy. Are we not then called to do the same? To go and seek and share salvation with those who are lost? Or are we just so pressed on every side with everything we've got to do that we're just walking by people all the time? Or it's a little inconvenient. Or I don't want to deal with them right now. Or I get there's important things in our life and priorities, and we need to pay attention to those things because we need to honor the Lord with those things too in our life. But I wonder if we could start to embrace not just inconvenience, but embracing the idea of initiating inconvenience in our life for the sake of finding someone lost. I mean, you know how it is. You can go out on your workbench or in your kitchen or whatever it is and move stuff around. You're looking for something, and then you discover something that you lost a while back. It wasn't super important. You look for it. You couldn't find it. A little frustration. You moved on, and all of a sudden you go, oh, hey, I wasn't looking for that, but I found it. And that's kind of neat. It's kind of like a lost person God brings into our life, and we kind of bump into it. That's different than going and seeking someone who's lost. The discovering of something that was lost, nifty. But when we seek and we find it, there's great rejoicing. Great rejoicing in heaven over one who is found. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. To be the living church on earth, we are saved through our faith in Christ and what he has done. But we're to become like him. I want to remind you and remind me that we're supposed to seek that which is lost. We do it over keys. Will you rally people to help you seek the lost? Like you rally people to help you find whatever it is you lost? I mean, maybe it's a lost relationship. Maybe it's something like that. Maybe it's a loss of health and you're working through it to try to regain what you've lost. All the discipline and all the thought and all the prayer and all the effort and all the planning it takes to do all of that. Yet do we do that? Do you and I do that? Over people. You see, it's the whole reason Jesus told the stories of lost sheep, lost coin, lost son, is that he came to seek and save the lost. Would you stand with me, please, all over this room? This is just a reminder this morning of our call. It's a reminder that just kind of says, hey, I got to be about the call. I got to be about the mission. Because it's easy to just hang around with the same people you always hang around. And we need those friendships. Or to just all of a sudden come into the Christian family and now you're surrounded by Christian people and that's the extent of your life. Come on, we don't have to look that far, really, do we? Fellow student, co-worker, we live in a community where there's people all around us. Jesus told disciples, open your eyes. Look, look. The fields are white for harvest. It's just a call and reminder this morning that it's not about, oh God, bring someone into my life you want me to share with. That's good. But it's like discovering something that was lost that you weren't really looking for. We also have to be looking. We've got to be seeking. So I want to encourage you. Put the same effort into seeking people who are lost as you and I do, seeking to find something we've lost.
Thanks for joining us on the LifeCast. It is a ministry of New Life Assembly of God in Sparta, Wisconsin. If you are ever in the area, we would enjoy the opportunity of meeting you. Until then, remember, God is for you, not against you.